Hello, everybody, and welcome to the first AfriCast for 2021. My name is Brendan Lotz, and joining me today is Clinton Matos.
Hello again, everyone.
And Robin Lichetti.
Howdy.
How are you guys off to the break? Did you have a good break?
Yeah, it was sorely needed.
Yeah.
I was waking up on the holiday in the break and thinking, just like, I'm just gonna sleep for another 30 minutes.
And yourself, Robin?
It was fine. I wouldn't mind closing my eyes and waking up in February.
I wouldn't mind closing my eyes and waking up in December 2021, if I'm honest with you, because so far 2021 is turning out to basically mirror 2020. But I'm sure we'll talk about that in some other podcast. Today, we really just want to chat about technology. Starting with you first, Robin. Last night, Samsung announced some new smartphones.
Yeah, that's right. The S21 series. So Samsung, I guess, kind of went a bit off script. Normally, they like to reveal their new S flagship devices at MWC. But yeah, they've done things a bit earlier this time around. And we have three new flagship phones from them. That's the S21, the S21 Plus, and the S21 Ultra. And to be fair, the devices are pretty much what we expected from Samsung. They usually knock it out of the park as far as specifications and functionality and design go on paper. Obviously, we have to see what these devices are like in hand. But it seems like most people are pleasantly receptive to the new devices that Samsung have on board. I do, however, want to mention one interesting element from last night's unveiling. The fact that Samsung is also ditching smartphone chargers in its packaging for the S21 series. They're also ditching the earphones. The earphones, to be fair, I don't think anyone really cares about that because regardless of what the manufacturer is, they're normally poor quality anyway.
Yeah.
The charger is the worst sticking point for me, especially as a lot of manufacturers took jabs at Apple for doing the same thing last year with the iPhone 12. And now Samsung has done it. So
wasn't Samsung one of those companies that was taking a jab?
Brendan, you know what you're remembering? Remembering the fact that Apple got rid of the jack, and then somebody in a big Samsung presentation made fun of that fact, and then the next year they also removed the jack. I think that's
Okay. Anyway, carry on, Robin.
Yeah, so I think it's just the fact that now you've got two of the largest smartphone makers in the world ditching chargers. It'll be kind of interesting to see whether other manufacturers in the market kind of follow suit. But for me anyway, these new S21 series devices are sporting far larger batteries than in previous years.
Mm-hmm.
And people, I don't think, really understand when it comes to wattage and the fact that along with your smartphone batteries, the chargers themselves also degrade over time. So I think a lot of people are going to have to be forking out money to buy a watt-compatible charger for their new S21 series. And I think a lot of people are going to be upset about the fact that they are quite expensive. We've also kind of detailed the pricing for the S21 series. The S21, which is, I guess, the regular model, it's a 6.2-inch version.
Mm-hmm.
That one starts at $17,999. Then the S21 Ultra, which is a 6.7-inch variant, that will retail for R21,499. And the S21 Ultra, which is 6.8 inches and also has a few other added elements as far as RAM and camera performance goes, that's R27,999. Which are obviously massive prices, but I guess when you compare them to what Apple had for the iPhone when the logo pricing was eventually detailed, it's pretty much on par. That said, I do wonder if people have appetite for these devices at the moment, given how poorly 2021 has started. That said, the devices are up for pre-order now, so it looks like Samsung are wasting no time as far as getting stock into the country goes. They're saying that deliveries can happen as early as the 26th of this month. But thereafter, you should be able to purchase one in store or online at least from 5th of February. So Samsung are definitely looking to hit the ground running in 2021.
So, Robin, just one quick question. The battery in these new Samsung devices, do they support super fast charging 2.0?
That actually I'm not 100% sure. I know the capacity is it's 4,000 for the S21, 4,800 for the S21 Ultra, and 5,000 milliamp for the sorry, I got that wrong around. Sorry. It's 4,000 for the S21, 4,800 for the S21 Plus, and then 5,000 for the S21 Ultra. So these are really large capacity batteries. As far as the super fast charging 2.0, I actually don't know.
So the only reason I'm asking, I'm not trying to put you on the spot and gotcha.
Sure.
The reason I'm asking is because I'm on the Samsung website right now looking at pricing for these for a wall wart and a 45-watt travel adapter with super fast charging 2.0 currently retails for 995 Rand on the through Samsung. So that's directly through Samsung, which we would recommend you buy because you want to make sure that this thing is charging correctly and that if anything goes wrong, you can say, well, it was your charger, your phone, replace it or fix it. But these things are very expensive. That's 1,000 Rand for a wall wart for a charger. Yeah. I mean,
I think that Samsung South Africa has kind of missed the trick here.
Yeah.
I know for the pre-orders, they've been bundling it with some of the wireless earbuds.
Yeah.
And those kind of things. And a new smart tag that Samsung has developed. I would rather you bundle that with a charger.
Yeah, please. Samsung South Africa, if you're listening, put it in the charger.
They can't send out press releases that say, hey, we're saving the environment by not putting a charger in the box.
Yeah, but you're saving your customers money, so that's better, I think.
Oh, God, I can't believe it. The other day, I have a Note 9 still, and it's slowly breaking down, and my charger, like you said, Robin, had just stopped working the other day. And to get the same model of charger that came in my box for a phone that's coming on 3 years old is 850 Rand.
Yeah, it's ridiculous,
and that's,
man.
I think it's one of the 15-watt fast chargers. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's a stupid amount of money for something that should be included in the box. And that, like I said, will break eventually, even if you take really good care of it, like I did. So,
I think Samsung really talking up the fact that you can trade in multiple devices, but as far as I understand, if I am trading in a device, I need to bring in the box that comes in the charge and all the other things as well.
I was just thinking that's such a good point, Robin. I was just thinking about I was actually over the holiday. I was thinking about maybe I should trade this Note 9 in and get maybe even just the Note 10, the direct upgrade. But like you said, you will have to supply the charger in the box. Otherwise, I'm not sure about Samsung's way of doing it, but you'll either get much less for the phone or they won't take it at all.
Yeah. I mean, even if you're selling on the phone secondhand on something like Gumtree or OLX or one of these other marketplaces, I'm sure that the buyer's not going to be very happy if you say, listen, mate, I'm keeping my charger. Like, they're just going to be like, okay, well, they're not like $2,000 off for the price because they're going to have to now go drive and get one. So I don't know. It feels like some really silly window dressing that's happening here. Like, oh, like we're saving the environment, but your customers can't charge their phones. Okay. Suppose that is ultimately saving the environment because then your customers don't need electricity. And hey, wait, we're in South Africa. So we have load shedding.
It's not as if the newly designed S21 has a whole bunch of new elements that require new manufacturing processes, and I'm sure those don't have an impact on the environment.
Yeah.
I mean, that's another conversation.
Yeah, let's okay. So S21.
Can you imagine if car makers were like, we're going to sell you a four-door saloon, but we're going to take all the seats out. You'll have to buy one seat
separately.
Driver,
yeah.
You'll have to buy other seats if you want to take passengers.
And we only sell vegan leather. You have to buy the vegan leather option because it's safe. It's safer for the environment. I don't know. Seems silly to me. Seems very silly to me. Moving on. Clinton, you have some news about Lucasfilms?
Yes, it's been a weird week. So it's not just Lucasfilms. It's Lucasfilm Games. So this is the name of a company that used to actually make games. But Disney came out and said they're bringing the brand back. And they specifically use the word brand. They said they're bringing the brand back. And basically, all the Star Wars games released in the last few years have been retroactively branded as Lucasfilm's games. So that's like There's a whole list here in the story that we'll link to, but just like Star Wars Battlefront 2, that came out a few years ago, and you can now get it for free or for Epic, depending on when you're listening to this. But that's a game that was made by EA, and now it's just going to be labeled a Lucasfilm's game. It's very weird, and when this news came out, a lot of people just thinking, okay, you know, they're reorganizing brands within Disney. Who really cares? But then the very next day, it was announced that Machine Games is making an Indiana Jones game, which is really cool. Machine Games, if you guys didn't know, sorry about that, they made the wave of Wolfenstein games. And they will be putting out this Indiana Jones game sometime in the future. There's very little details about it, other than they're saying it's an original story that will also be published by Bethesda. And it'll be executive produced by Todd Howard.
Oh, goodness.
Sweet little lies. So we know very little about that game. It's just, it's very surprising that that came out. And then also on top of that, the developers who made The Division are also working on a new Star Wars game. So it's very weird. And also that's being published by Ubisoft. So I guess that EA having an exclusive deal with Disney to make Star Wars games is going to be over soon. I think I remember Jason Schreier used to do a lot of good work at Kotaku, I think it was. He put out a tweet saying he's received word that the exclusive license that EA has to make Star Wars games is not going to be renewed in like 2023, I think is when that deal ends.
Oh, wow.
And it's not going to be renewed. So, I mean, we don't have to wait that long. We know that Ubisoft and Bethesda, two publishers who aren't EA, are going to be making Star Wars games. And thank God, because EA has put out some milquetoast nonsense in the last... They got the exclusive deal for like 10 years. And they put out... There's been some good games. A lot of people like Battlefront 2, like I mentioned. Jedi Order, I played that. It was a really good game. But they didn't have any... Like Disney themselves with the Star Wars prequel movie, sequel movies, they had no clear goal what to do with one of the biggest licenses in the world. And they kind of, I won't say they squandered it, I'm sure they made profit, but they didn't really do anything that set the world on fire. So yeah, I'll put links to those three stories I just mentioned.
I don't know, loot boxes set the world on fire.
Oh my God, we want to give players a sense of progression. And what was it?
Surprise mechanics.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So yeah, we'll hopefully hear more about this. I'm excited about Indiana Jones, but I don't know what they can do that will separate it from
Uncharted.
And the new Tomb Raider games, because a lot of people look at those games and think, yeah, that's just Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
You're shooting people, you got a whip in one of them or a grappling hook in Uncharted 4. You're going into old ruins, and you're stealing from dead civilizations, and you're not putting them in a museum. So yeah, we already have the genre covered. So, but we'll see. You know, Machine Games is pretty good, even though the last Wolfenstein game wasn't too well-received, Youngblood. And we'll just have to wait. This, especially the Bethesda announcement, this strikes me as we'll announce it now and then in like 2 years. We'll say, hey, it's coming out soon. Hey, remember that Bethesda announced Elder Scrolls 6 and Starfield in 2018? We haven't heard a peep about those. Anyway, I'll link to all of that, and we'll move on to the next story.
Yeah.
Just
so,
before that, here's my crazy pitch for the Indiana Jones game.
Yes.
Yeah.
Instead of exploring and archaeology, you're just Indiana Jones, the professor. So you're just at your university teaching lectures.
That would be hilarious, but I think that's actually a good angle they could go. Instead of, you could be like, what's Indiana Jones's son's name?
Shia LaBeouf.
No, the actor's name. But I could see a game where you play as him and then Indiana Jones is like your mentor and he's like Sully in the Uncharted games. You see, Uncharted has done this all. But that would be hilarious if they put out a game and it was like university.
You have to keep your students socially distanced because there's a pandemic on the go that your grandfather let loose.
You know what would be hilarious as well is in those games, Indiana is usually fighting the Nazis. And then they're like, oh, Indiana Jones is so SJW. The Nazis deserve free speech or whatever. That would be hilarious. We need a game where you just mercilessly kill Nazis.
Isn't that called Wolfenstein?
Like I said, Youngblood was not well received, Brendan.
Fair enough. Not
for any political reasons. It wasn't what people wanted from Wolfenstein, even though I had a decent amount of fun with it. You can read my review.
Right, let's move on. CES 2021 happened this week. It was a digital experience this time around, and not much really happened. There were a few strange announcements. I saw Razer has its own mask now. It's concept mask that has LEDs. Of course it does. LG has a bed that has a TV hidden in it. Hey, all just weird stuff. We're not going to touch on that today, though. I want to take a look at some of the bigger announcements from the likes of Intel and AMD, as well as NVIDIA. So Intel has been quite quiet in the past few months. We heard that 11th Gen is coming with support for PCI 4.0. And that's what we seem to have here. 11th gen processors were announced. There are four processor families. Those are the Intel 11th gen V Pro platform for business notebooks. Then we have the N series Intel Pentium Silver and Celeron processors. And I hear a collective recoil at the mention of Pentium and Celeron. These CPUs are mainly designed for education needs. But in my personal experience, I think that these are very underpowered processors. Oh, however, yeah. I'd like to see whether Intel has managed to get a sort of improvement. They say that there's a 35% increase in application performance.
That's not good enough still, though.
And 78% better graphics performance compared to previous Intel generations of these processors. So, I mean, like you say, Clinton, it's really not that much of an improvement. When you look at how slow and lethargic, I think, is the most politically correct way I can describe these processes. Yeah, I don't know whether these will be good. I'm interested to see the V Pro platform, because this is specifically for business notebooks. And I think maybe there could be some performance gains to be had for things like Excel, like your work applications, that sort of thing. Sticking with mobile processors, there's a new 11th gen Intel Core H series, which is designed for gaming notebooks. So if you are looking for a gaming notebook, these processors will probably be designed for that. And then the absolute top of the pops is the Intel 11th gen Core S series of desktop CPUs. We don't know when these are coming. We have sometime in 2021. It's either late or halfway through. Intel's very vague about when these can be expected. But the interesting thing to note here is that Intel is claiming for these Core S series desktop CPUs an IPC improvement of 19%. Now, that's interesting because that's the exact same IPC improvement that AMD claimed with its Zen 3 processors when they released late last year. So this is very interesting. And they're still on a 10 nanometer process. So they're not in 7 like AMD is at the moment. So this will be interesting to see. I'm very curious to see what their design, what their chip design looks like, and how they manage to squeeze that IPC is instructions per clock, which is how you measure your CPU's performance. So this will be interesting to see. I'm keen to see what Intel does this year. They need to do something because AMD is absolutely taking them to the cleaners. A sentence I didn't think I would be saying ever. On top of that, AMD also announced its stack of mobile Ryzen 5000 processors. There are quite a few of them, starting with the AMD how I'm going to stack this up is to explain it, because they're all Ryzen 5000 chips, but then they have a suffix. So the suffix here is the AMD Ryzen U, which is based off of the Zen 2 architecture. So I would probably avoid these chips. Mainly just because they're using older architecture, you're probably not going to get the performance that you're expecting, or the performance gain that you're expecting here. So those two chips are the AMD Ryzen 5 5500U and the AMD Ryzen 3 5300U. Those two are using the Zen 2 architecture, but then you have the AMD Ryzen 5 5600U, which I think more folks will opt for in terms of OEMs, your original equipment manufacturers. These will probably be in your thin and light notebooks, your Chromebooks, your internet machines, I think that these will probably be better for educational purposes than the Celerons of the world. Next up, we have the AMD Ryzen 5000H series, which is kind of the mid-range. It's supposed to be a balance between performance and battery power. So, or power draw, rather. So this will be your mid-range. And then the H series, which has HS, HX, and just plain H, those are where your enthusiasts are going to be playing, where gaming notebooks will be made, and that sort of stuff. So it looks pretty good. Power draw from these chips is rather high. AMD, at the highest, the AMD Ryzen 9 5980HX, which is obviously an enthusiast gaming notebook CPU, has a TDP of 45 watts, which is pretty high for a mobile processor. Although I am comparing that to Intel, which is generally within the 15 to 40 watt range. So that's very interesting. For NVIDIA announced its Max-Q architecture for notebooks. That's using the RTX 30 series. And, I mean, there's not much to say here. It's RTX 30 series with in a notebook chassis. We don't know too much more about performance. NVIDIA's will be revealing more performance figures later down the line, later this month, actually. I mean, this could be... We already know that the RTX 30 series performs incredibly well. It's a great set of or series of GPUs. The only problem is that nobody could get their hands on them because scalpers were able to get them. Yeah,
either company say, "Hey, we're working on that. We'll have more soon."
They did mention it. It was mentioned that there had been problems with supply chains and scalpers and that. Although they didn't mention scalpers by name, but they did mention that there were supply chain issues and that they are working hard to fix those up.
And if you're MSI, people are literally stealing truckloads of them.
But yeah, so I mean, it's all just all the hardware announcements seem to be very much focused on notebooks. This is generally what happens around CES because, as we know, last year all the desktop hardware was announced, except for Intel, which still hasn't really announced when we can expect its late next generation of desktop CPUs. But yeah, we also, from CES, there were a couple of announcements from the likes of LG. I think one of the bigger ones was that LG smart TVs will get Google Stadia support later this year, which is nice if you live in a place that has Google Stadia support, I suppose. And then obviously we had notebook announcements from Asus, Gigabyte, HP. So everybody's just bringing their latest tech using all of the latest hardware announcements. So yeah, I mean, we're starting to see those notebooks roll out. Obviously, there'll be a bit more later in the year. I'm curious to see what happens at MWC this year, because now Samsung has announced its smartphone. Is MWC even happening this year, Robin? Do you know?
It is still ongoing, but I don't think anyone has at least issued out press invites for their events yet.
Yeah,
it could be a very sparse MWC this year.
I tend to think the same, especially with how slow CES was this year. I know everybody's hosting their stuff online. It's just I didn't see the fanfare that I've seen in past years. Obviously, you can't because not everybody can go to Las Vegas and spend all night partying. But yeah, I'm expecting MWC to be, as you say, Robin, probably a very muted affair this year.
Probably only Sony will.
Yeah.
Because they've been the MWC stalwart. But I think the likes of LG and Huawei are probably going to try and do their own things before the event happens.
Do you think that maybe Samsung will announce a new folding phone at MWC? Like they announced their regular phones in their own event now at the Unpacked, and then they're saving the folding stuff for MWC?
They could do, although I'm not really too sure about that. See, I would have done it at the same time, just because you have the world's attention, and as we've seen today, the news cycle is positive, absolutely dominated by Samsung news. So I would have done it at the same time, but then again, I mean, it never hurts to just get your name in the news cycle again with a folding phone. And I suppose there is the Z Flip needs an update. So, yeah, you could be right.
I don't know. I mean, the Z Flip got 5G. The Fold 2 came out late last year. For me, it just seems like the iteration window is a bit too
close. Yeah.
So, yeah, I would love to know what the thinking behind the strategy was, why they did it so early. It seems like it just seems like an odd move from Samsung's part. Maybe they know something that we don't, because they were, I guess, luckily they were ahead of everyone else when just before the COVID-19 pandemic struck. They got their hardware out there very quickly, so they know something.
I'm not joking about this, but do you think maybe it has something to do with the stimulus in America? Because with Biden taking over, there's a lot of talk that there's going to be the $2,000 stimulus checks, or they've already issued the $600 ones. There might be another one that's $1,400 to make up the deficit. Maybe they want to get in there and give people something to spend their money on.
Perhaps. I mean, we have seen like second waves or third waves, depending on what the country is, happening recently. So that could be potentially be a thing. But again, I guess we are kind of just throwing around ideas.
Yeah, theories. Anyway, something I do want to talk about now that we've gotten the news out of the way is big tech. So if you are on Twitter, likely in the past week you've heard that Donald Trump, or at real Donald Trump, is no more. The account was banned last week Friday by Twitter following, I guess we can call them, riots at the Capitol building in the US. And this has sparked off a series of questions about big tech. That also helped move this conversation along was WhatsApp changing its privacy policy. And WhatsApp has since come out and explained what this privacy policy change is for. Basically, if you are not dealing with a Facebook business account, Facebook is not going to be WhatsApp is not going to be passing along data to WhatsApp. Although it is already passing along data to Facebook, it's a very messy situation, very murky situation, which we'll dive into today, explain a bit more. But the question that I am hoping we can discuss today is whether big tech companies have too much power. And the reason I want to have this conversation is primarily because of what's happened to Donald Trump now. So I don't think that Donald Trump didn't deserve to be banned from Twitter. I think that a lot of what he's tweeted over the last 4 years, and especially on the day where extreme right-wing individuals stormed the Capitol building, there's been, I think that Trump kind of earned his ban. However, does Twitter have the right to just ban somebody? Now, I know it's a private company. I understand that. It's a private company can do whatever it wants. We've had this conversation many times. But when it's the president of the United States that we're talking about, and many people quite rightly pointed out that people on Twitter do much worse and maintain their accounts, one has to wonder where we draw the line. So I want to put the question to you. Let's start with you, Robin. Do you think that big tech companies have too much power?
So short answer is yes, far too much power. But with regard to the aspect when it comes to Twitter and its banning of Donald Trump, I can argue both sides, really.
Yeah.
I think free speech is something that should be allowed to happen. Again, you kind of have to tread a very fine line, because when Trump's account was suspended, it was for inciting violence.
Yeah.
That said, if it is an online platform, you should be able to say what you feel or what you want. On the other side of it, again, Twitter is a platform that's owned by a private company. There are terms of service. You have to adhere to them if you want to use the platform. And remember, this was the at real Donald Trump account. It wasn't the POTUS account, which Trump is supposed to be tweeting from if it is in an official capacity. If it's his own personal account, then Twitter can really do as it pleases. I think the POTUS one is in the interest of the public, so should be allowed to operate currently. Yeah. But yeah, from his personal account, I could care very little if he gets banned because of all the vitriol he likes to spit out on me.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you, specifically around the point that it is his personal account that was banned, not the official president of the US account. So, I mean, everybody going on about, oh, he's being censored. Something I do want to mention. Did you guys happen to watch The Death of 2020 or Death to 2020 on Netflix?
I saw bits and pieces. I saw a couple, I guess, not skits, but I guess
so,
episodes.
So I don't know if you saw this week during the impeachment vote, there was a senator who was wearing a mask that had the word censored over the mask. I don't know if you saw that.
Was he a Republican, Brendan?
She was a Republican, yes, that was wearing a mask that said censored on C-SPAN, you know, a public platform where anybody can tune in and watch them. But in Death to 2020, there Lisa Kudrow plays a character who's supposed to be a presidential spokesperson, who says, "I'm being censored," and then goes on to a big channel TV. "I'm being censored. I'm being censored. I'm being censored," all over public platforms. So it's quite funny when people say, "Oh, I'm being censored," but yet everybody's carrying your message. Clinton, your thoughts on whether big tech companies have too much power?
I think they've got too much power. They've become too centralized, and any company that has billions of dollars and worldwide reach is going to be a problem for not just for their customers, but for the whole world. And let me touch on Trump quick, going off what you said, Brendan. I think the only reason he's being banned is because he's on the way out. Yeah, he's the president, but for the next like week. Mm. And when he was banned, he only had like 2 weeks left.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and all the companies that are banning him now have no spine because they had the last 4 years to do this and then they didn't do anything. This is just posturing, in my opinion. Again, they had 4 years. Why didn't they do anything in the last 4 years? Oh, because he was the president and he had power and he could have retaliated. Now that he's on his way out and his bags are probably packed in the White House, hopefully, now they're like, oh, okay, now we're going to ban him. And they're saying, oh, the insurrection was the tipping point or whatever. Maybe there wouldn't have been an insurrection if he had banned him sooner.
Mm-hmm.
So it's good that they did ban him because when he's not president anymore, he's not going to shut up, right? No matter how bad the defeat is and whatever happens to him, he's still going to be – he would have still been tweeting, and I wouldn't be surprised if he makes a new account. So it's good that he's gone now, but it's too little too late. How many people died indirectly because of things that he said on there and the incitement that he helped with, right? Too little, too late. I'm not going to speak more about that, but I just want to touch on what you said, Brendan. He's the president, so maybe he's got special considerations, and it's shocking that they banned him. Yeah, but he's not president for much longer, yeah. So it doesn't really matter in the whole scope of things. So let me go back to, do big companies have too much power? Yes, unfortunately, in America, where most of them are based, you can lobby the Congress people. So you can just change the law by paying them enough money. So they are almost certainly never going to be broken up unless there's something ridiculous happens in America, like a proper French Revolution. What are we supposed to do? I have no idea. You can't say, this is hilarious. I always hear people say, oh, delete your Facebook account. Delete your Facebook account. Are you daft? I'm going to delete my Facebook account. I'm only going to use Instagram from now on. They own by Facebook.
Yeah.
When you log into Facebook, when you log into WhatsApp, it says Facebook right at the bottom there.
Yeah.
This is also hilarious when people are like, oh, I'm leaving WhatsApp. I'm never going to use it again. And then they're like, oh, but I'll keep using Facebook. I'll keep using Instagram. I'll keep using my Oculus Rift. I don't want to say people are dumb. Sorry, let me just finish this real quick. Somebody said to me the other day, what changes? And I said, if you're using any of Facebook's other platforms, literally nothing changes except that WhatsApp privacy message. Sorry, Brendan, I cut you off there.
Yeah, no. So what I wanted to just point out very quickly is that we're talking about social media, well, how Twitter has responded to the likes of Donald Trump. But, I mean, I don't think that these social media companies have as much power as they think they have. to put it succinctly in words. So the reason I say this is because, as we saw with Donald Trump's accounts, when there was some sort of misinformation, bam, slapped with a warning immediately. Now, earlier this week, the ANC Youth League tweeted out a list of herbal remedies for COVID-19. I saw that tweet live for a couple of hours. It had no warning about misinformation, no banner saying, hey, maybe you should check this out, hey, check out our resources on COVID-19, none of that. And it makes me wonder whether these companies are really as committed to fighting misinformation and all this sort of stuff on their platform, but just as so long as it's related to the US. And yeah. I kind of get that because these companies are based in the US, they have to abide by US law, but you can't deny that your company is operating in places. So, for instance, if we see what's happening in Uganda at the moment, like Uganda's pretty much locked down because there's a presidential election happening and there's intimidation, stuff happening on social media. And I don't see any of this on Twitter or Facebook because it just seems like, oh, well, we got some advertising to show you. Let's shove it this way. It just seems like these companies are so out of touch with what's happening around in the rest of the world, and they think they have so much power, but they actually don't have much power outside of the US, it seems to me, at least, because we don't see these labels and this fight against misinformation happening beyond the US and Canadian borders. That's at least what I'm seeing from the outside in.
I think the power they have is indirect. It's not like Mark Zuckerberg could go on Facebook and say, I don't know, go vote in this poll. I want someone to win Man of the Year or whatever, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that the power they have is direct. It's indirect. It's a catalyst for people with bad intentions and good intentions. A lot of good stuff is done on the platform. It's a catalyst for those things to happen. And it's also a catalyst because Facebook doesn't police it as much as it should. And, you know, I think we discussed this about Facebook specifically, where they have offices in Johannesburg for their South Africa branch. But what are they doing for South Africa specifically? And I know you're talking about the ANC Youth League tweeting out the stuff for COVID. Mm. I can't remember which year it was. It might have been 2 or 3 years ago. But the city of Joburg tweeted out that if you eat potatoes, it like it boosts your immune system. They were also tweeting out ridiculous quote-unquote remedies that have no basis in
fact.
In fact, I was going to say in medicine or science, but that is fact. So the stuff like this has been happening for a very long time. And before social media, people saying this, you know, in the streets, at the water cooler, at the coffee pot in the office. This stuff has always been happening, but now they have a catalyst to reach an unprecedented amount of people. And yeah, their power is indirect. The real power, and this is in the Communist Manifesto, I think. The real power is the people, right? The power that Facebook has is its users. The power Twitter has is its users. But the fact that they're on their platform is their power for advertising reasons. And yeah, so Facebook has no direct power unless you consider the fact, again, that they can lobby congressmen and congresswomen.
So I'm going to disagree with you, Clinton. I'm going to say that tech companies have lots of direct power, most notably AWS, which segues nicely into the next section I want to talk about. So earlier this week as well, actually last weekend, AWS announced that they would be removing Parler from its services. Or from its servers. What is Parler? Parler is or has become a home for far-right conspiracies, racism, and other bigoted behavior over recent years, mostly because folks get banned from Twitter or Facebook, and they're looking for somewhere to, or some soapbox to use, and they found Parler. This decision came after Google and Apple announced that they would remove Parler from their app stores. Now, the problem here is that Parler, from what we've seen, has allegedly breached Amazon Web Services terms of service, right? So the way that they breached this allegedly was by hosting content that incited or encouraged violence, and they either didn't have the tools to deal with it
or they didn't want to deal with the issue. So Amazon Web Services kicked Parler off of its servers. And now Parler is shopping around. It seems to have found a new home in a company called Epic, which hosts another service called Gab. This is Epic with a K, E-P-I-K, not E-P-I-C. And yeah, Parler seems to have found a new home. But for a week there, Parler has been offline. It is still offline as of time of recording this podcast. Let me just make sure of that. Yes, it is still offline as of time of recording this podcast. It could come back at any moment. But I think that this is a display of the direct power that these companies have. Because when you think Amazon, many people are going to think, oh, Amazon.com, I can go and order
anything.
Anything, literally anything off of Amazon.com. But what people don't think about is the other power that these companies have. Where with Amazon, they have AWS, which manages servers. And I think that this is where the power of big tech companies kind of comes, well, the previous question kind of becomes answered by, it's more a question of how much power governments have. So with an instance such as this with Parler, there could be massive legal implications for Amazon if something was posted on Parler and it led to real-world consequences, right? So let's say that somebody posted on Parler that they were going to go and do something to somebody. And then that person actually went and did something. There could be huge legal consequences for Amazon as a result of that. Legal questions about why did you host something like this where everybody could see it? Why did you not take any action? These sorts of things come into play. And we've seen that happen now with Telegram. I don't know if you guys saw that a neo-Nazi group was taken off of Telegram this week.
I saw a lot of groups were taken off of...
I think more than a dozen have been taken off.
So here's the thing that I just want to highlight very quickly, is that while Telegram is all about privacy and all about trying to protect its users, if you do something that is Nazi behavior or problematic or that could result in Telegram being in trouble with the law... they are going to turn on you, right? They're not going to protect you, the user. They're going to either kick you off of the platform or they're going to report you to the authorities or both. So when it comes to the law, that's where you have these companies pegged, right? Is where their privacy policies really come into test. Now, I'm not going to say that some companies will always cooperate with the law. There are some that just won't. And no-log VPNs are called no-log VPNs for a reason, so that they don't necessarily have to work with authorities. But I think that there's a larger conversation to be had where everybody's going, oh, well, I'm being censored. I'm being kicked off of platform A, and not asking the question, why was I kicked off of platform A? Well, maybe your content, the stuff that you were saying, you thought it was a joke and you think it's a joke. But in the context of a courtroom, when you read that stuff out, it's going to look really, really bad. I think that this is the thing that where a lot of people kind of mistake the power that these companies have. And I do still think that these companies have a lot of power in terms of the data that they have access to, etc. But I also think a lot of their power comes from A, needing to police their platforms, and B, fear of being taken down by authorities. I don't know whether you guys have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, so that's the thing, right? If Twitter deleted Donald Trump's Twitter account, and they put out a statement saying, we don't like him because he's got blonde hair, right?
Yeah.
That would be an abuse of power.
Absolutely. But
because he broke the terms of service, that's why his account was deleted. That's, again, why I'm going to argue with you, Brendan. Direct power would be deleting whoever they want for whatever reason they want. That's direct power. Mm-hmm. Indirect power is that they deleted them because they didn't abide by the terms of service.
Fair enough.
So that's my problem here. A lot of people are saying Donald Trump was banned because he's president, he's got blonde hair, whatever. But if anyone else did an absolutely minuscule amount of the things that Donald Trump did on Twitter, they would have been banned. Twitter let him get away with murder for a very long time. I really don't understand people saying that if somebody else did what Trump did, they wouldn't have gotten deleted. They would have gotten deleted. I follow a lot of people who are just joke accounts, and they get deleted all the time because they tell a joke that Twitter's like, oh, that's too edgy for us. You joked about... I can't even say it because maybe I'll get deleted. You joked about something that was too far, but it's clearly a joke, so we're going to ban you. We're going to time out your account for a week or two. So yeah, Robin? That's it. Again, I'm going to butt heads with you there. Sorry, what do you say?
Robin, your thoughts?
Yeah, so I kind of agree with both of you. In the way that these big tech companies have tons of power, it just depends on when they want to show it. So when, for example, CEOs of these big tech firms, and we're talking about essentially the big four, so Facebook, Google,
Amazon,
and probably Microsoft as well.
Yeah.
When these CEOs are called before the U.S. Senate to explain the decision-making and in particular how much power they have, they don't seem to bat an eyelash. They don't seem to be scared in any way whatsoever. And the rhetoric is always that we provide so many jobs for America. We provide America with so much power. It would behoove the U.S. Senate to not interfere with that.
Yeah.
And very quickly, the U.S. Senate falls away and says, okay, yeah, we'll continue to look into it. But nothing actually happens. And that's a real power that they have. Towards Clinton's point is that I do agree with him that they only showed when they have to. They could have banned Trump's personal account anytime they wanted to. There are 3, 4, 5 dozen different times where he's tweeted out ridiculous things that would get anyone else banned.
Yeah.
But they chose not to. Again, I think it is, like Clinton said, it's posturing, it's politicking, it's making them look good. And I think a lot of people are still unseeing it. Talk about the fact that WhatsApp is owned by Facebook. When Facebook had the whole Cambridge Analytica scandal, I don't think there was much of an outcry from the public. The media tried to highlight this as much as possible, but the public, I think, didn't really care that much.
Mm.
But now, because there's a confusion with regards to the privacy of your conversations on WhatsApp, which is actually not the case, your chats are still staying encrypted.
Yeah.
That forced a mass exodus. We brought up the point about Telegram and kicking off all those hate groups. How do you think Telegram knew what those hate groups were talking about?
Because Telegram doesn't have end-to-end encryption, guys.
Exactly. So it's I think people want to see only what they want to see, and they actually don't realize just how powerful these big tech firms are. If you have any presence online, if you have ever entered your email address for everything, if you use anything from Google, they're tracking you. Simple as.
Yeah. There's so
unfortunately, not getting around.
So this, you actually segued so nicely into the last thing I want to chat about, which is the control of your data and whether you care about the likes of Facebook and stuff having your data. And I had a conversation with a friend last weekend, and they were asking me, what do you think about this WhatsApp stuff? And I looked them dead in – well, I didn't look them in the eye. It was on Discord. So I said to them straight up, I don't really care, right? Because the thing is, I use Facebook so much. Google knows everything about me. There's a Google Home Mini next to my bed that I mumble – set my alarm. Oh, don't want to set it off. What time to set my alarm for? Google knows when I go to sleep. It knows when I go to bed because my computer shuts down with YouTube videos auto-playing in the background. Like, these companies know so much about me that a simple policy change of, oh, when you interact with a business, we might share some of that information with Facebook so that you can have a more seamless interaction if you deal with that business on Facebook. For me, that's just like, okay, cool. I understand where that's coming from. But like you say, Robin, I think that a lot of people, number A, don't understand how much data these companies have on them. Oh, Google. these companies don't understand just how much people don't understand how much data they have. And they don't understand what access these companies have. Because one of the things I saw with this news from WhatsApp updating its privacy policy was people saying, oh, well, now people will know if I use WhatsApp and Facebook. This should not be news to you. You should know that even Twitter probably knows that you use Facebook. Because if the app is on your phone, some apps are able to see what other apps are on your phone so that they can connect you seamlessly or let you log in easily. Like, I think that people just don't understand just how much of their data is out there in the world and what it's being used for. And when something like this WhatsApp thing happens, I kind of just get this twinge, like, but you didn't care when Cambridge Analytica stole millions of users' data and that whole thing came out. You just didn't care. But now, because your chat with Johnny might be seen by somebody at Facebook, now you worry. I just don't get it. It confuses the living heck out of me.
It's because people don't want their dick pics to get out there.
Is that what it takes? Is that you don't want the world to see your junk? Is that really what it takes?
It's only about when it actually affects you. Like you said, the Cambridge Analytica scandal might have affected millions of people, but no one actually knew, well, no one actually understood that it could have directly affected them. With WhatsApp, the confusion around the chats and those potentially being shared. And because of that, I think in particular, people are now worried. And that's why people started exiting the platform.
And
it's only when it actually affects you.
I mean, the other thing is that, like I mentioned, like Telegram doesn't have end-to-end encryption enabled by default. It does have end-to-end encryption, but you have to go and enable it when you download the application. Now, I don't know how many people know to go and do that. Right? I'm sure if you are hiding a crime, you would be able, or trying to hide that you're doing crime, you would enable that thing. But if you're like Johnny sharing your genitalia photos with somebody else, like, do you know that you should probably encrypt that chat, or do you not know? I mean, like, and all these people exit these platforms, jump onto something else, without understanding what the implications are, thinking that they can continue doing what they were doing on other platforms, or they can do something different to what they were doing on other platforms. And I wrote a piece about this this week about the terms of service. If you go and read the terms of service of, or the privacy policies of WhatsApp, Telegram, and Signal, they are very, very similar when it comes down to brass tacks. When it comes down to, hey, if we need to cooperate with law enforcement, we will. If we need to find you because you're missing, we will. We store these things. We store that. We store this. We store... And if people went and actually read those, they'd see, oh, okay, hang on, though. There's not really that much of a difference. I think the one with the least is Signal, because Signal doesn't require much from you. It's probably the most privacy-focused chat I've ever heard of. Telegram is very nice because it is more than just an instant messaging platform. I don't know if folks understand what they are doing. If you have been online, there's a chance that somebody has a profile on you somewhere. And by somebody, I mean a big tech company. Almost Clinton, it. Your thoughts?
It all comes down to two things, right? It's tech literacy. People don't understand all of this. And it's all the legalese, right? If people weren't presented with a 30-page or 100-page user agreement that is full of quote-unquote English, which is incomprehensible to the average person, if they weren't presented with that every time they want to make an account for something, maybe they would understand more. I mean, these companies obscure the facts for a reason, right?
Mm.
It's just a lack of knowledge about this. I'm just very surprised that so many people got that little pop-up on WhatsApp and immediately freaked out, because you get little pop-ups like that on everything. I'm not entirely sure why WhatsApp was so such a big thing, that this little change has been so big. Facebook has owned WhatsApp for how long?
Since 2014.
Yeah, so I really don't understand why this is the straw that broke the camel's back. But if people are paying more attention to their data privacy, that's a good thing, right?
I think it's too late, though. I think we've reached a point where it's... You either have privacy or you have stuff like Google Maps. Because if you don't want to share your location data, right, that means that you can't use something like Google Maps and it can't be used as your GPS. And I think that this is where the kind of misdirection comes from social or from big tech companies. It's like, hey, you know what? will help you get from point A to point B without you having to buy an additional device. We'll let you do that. But we're going to take every single piece of data along that route. We're going to know how fast you were traveling. We're going to know when you stopped. We're going to know if you used your phone. All of these things. And I mean, that's kind of the trade-off that you have to make is do you want features or do you want privacy? Because it seems now in 2021, you can no longer have both. You need to make a decision about what you want. And I'm sure that some very clever folks will tell me that, oh, well, there's this open source platform that you can use that will do this and that, and it doesn't collect data and all that sort of stuff. And my question to that person will be is it as good as Google Maps? And the answer will probably be no, it's not, because these companies have so much data to draw from. That's why Google Maps' traffic data is so good, because it's collecting data from so many millions of phones, and it's able to predict, like, all right, 7 o'clock on a Monday, N1's going to be gridlocked, and then it can even check live and verify that stuff. It's just we gave these companies so much power because we wanted features, and I don't think that we have privacy anymore. I think that it is well and truly dead.
Yeah. The Google Maps are really good. I'd be surprised whenever we hear about these services that people overseas say they're really good and then you use them in South Africa and they're not good because there isn't that amount of people using it. Mm. But even in South Africa, Google Maps is so up to date. People can put that there's been an accident or that the police have set up a traffic camera. I can't believe how accurate the traffic camera stuff is. South Africa. And again, for people who maybe don't use Google Maps for whatever reason or they're just not familiar, we don't mean permanent traffic cameras which are set up to stay there forever. We mean mobile traffic cameras which are set up for maybe a day or two and then taken down. Even those temporary ones, map users see them and they report them in the app and then you see them too. I wish the little pop-up that says, hey, have you seen this traffic camera? It was a bit smaller while I'm trying to drive. It's like my only complaint. It's impressive what happens when we all work together, but the problem is to work together, we all have to surrender our data to Google. So, you know, at the end of the day, it's a trade-off. You could not use a single one of Google's products, but it would be really difficult. You'd use Bing, but then what are you going to use for your email? And what
can't you use Android if you're going to use if you don't want to use Google? No Android.
Apple's not that much better either. And then what are you using for a phone? You'd have to use a feature phone or some kind of weird crackpot phone. So yeah, it's a trade-off like everything else in life.
Yeah, and it worries me. It does worry me. But then ultimately, if all data is public and there is no privacy, then is everybody a bit more safer if you know everybody's secrets? I don't know. Maybe.
Wasn't there a fiction one?
Yeah. Tom Scott actually did a chat about it. It's actually really good, about the day privacy died. It's really, really well worth a watch. And it kind of tackles a lot of the issues that we've laid out here. But yeah, I think I'll send you the link, Clinton, if you can just pop that in this post at the bottom. But yeah, I think that's the summation we've come up to is that big tech companies are very powerful and there's not much we can do about it unless we want to all stop using them and their services. Alternatively, maybe we just need decentralized technology. Is that something that could work, maybe? I don't know.
I'm sure a lot of smarter people are smarter than us have written lots of words about this and they haven't even come to a conclusion yet.
Yeah, it's a tricky situation, but hopefully 2021 we'll see some improvements in this space. Maybe like Clinton says, more folks are worried about their privacy and that can't be a bad thing. And maybe there will be pressure from folks saying, listen, maybe don't share my data with everybody around you. And hey, maybe this century we'll have a data revolution. Wouldn't that be fun, hey?
Or the AI just takes over. And
yeah, I mean, yeah. It's
one way or the other.
So either way, the next century is going to be very exciting. I think that's going to wrap it up from us for this week, though. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to us babble about technology and what's been happening in the world. From myself, Brendan Lotz, cheerio. From Robin Lichetti.
Yeah, take care, everyone.
And from Clinton Matos.
Bye, everybody.
We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.